The Reconstructionist Radio Podcast Network presents Setting the Record Straight with Pastor Gordon Runyon and friends. As they seek to understand and dissect many of the issues plaguing the church today, from the pulpit to the pew.
Hello, my name is Joyce Runyon, and I want to thank you for tuning in to Setting the Record Straight podcast. Our teacher today is my husband of 30 years, Pastor Gordon Runyon from Emmanuel Baptist Church in Tucumcari, New Mexico. It's his assigned task here to sort out theological errors and mistakes of all flavors. Our topic today is an important one. So without further ado, here is our host, Gordon Runyon.
Made it through.
It's always a good time here.
what take was that? Was that three or four? Yeah. Well, that was real good. I'm glad you got that one.
Me too.
All right. So it's been a few weeks since we podcasted, and we've got middle daughter Jordan with us again. Say hello, Jordan.
Hello, Jordan.
Well, I should have put a comma in there.
Especially with an English major.
Well, you know.
Well, let's see. Last time we were together, we did part one
of our bad arguments.
Yeah, part one of a show called Bad Arguments Against Theonomy. And again, this is just, if you didn't hear the first half, this is just a way of dealing with several objections that we who believe in theonomy, we get these all the time. And they show up on Facebook and comment sections. And frankly, it gets a little bit irritating having to deal with these. And I just thought in a lighthearted way we would address some of these objections. And the challenge that I have assigned myself is to answer the objections with questions. And several of us have found that's kind of a good way to get an argument going in your direction, is you ask the right question that forces people to kind of think about what they just said and
well,
why.
Well, then if you just answer them,
yeah,
they really don't want to hear the answer.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're going to kind of say, man, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When you make them have to think about what they're asking you, then that makes it a little bit more.
Then they get even madder. Okay, so if you're interested, we did six of these in the last podcast. Why don't you just read all six of those out real fast, Jordan, so they know what they missed.
Okay, so number one, these are all the arguments against theonomy that are bad. So number one is Jesus said His kingdom was not of this world. And then number two is, we are not living under the old covenant theocracy anymore. Jeez. And then number three, Christian morality can't be installed from the top down. Number four was, theonomy is a works-based religion. Number five, theonomists are mean. I thought that one was real compelling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The force of the logic there is,
yeah, it's good.
Really hard to deal
it's
with.
It's tough. And then the last one we talked about last time was, we are not under law, but under grace.
All right. So if you're interested in those six and how we dealt with those at that time, just scroll down on the Reconstructionist Radio page or on the Setting the Record Straight page at Facebook, and those will be there.
And but for today,
we've got a new set of bad arguments. So let's read the first one there.
Okay. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's.
Right. That's the whole argument. Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. Okay. And that's generally how it's stated as well. No exposition or anything like that. And of course, Jesus does say that. Now, the question that I have in response is, I have two, actually. You can pick whichever one you like better. The first question and response is, well, what should Caesar render? And the next question is, well, who decides what is Caesar's? And I think probably the best way to explain that is to deal with them one at a time. So the first smart aleck answer is, what should Caesar render? You know, Psalm 24, verse 1 says, the earth is the Lord's, and all its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein. So according to that verse, God owns everything.
Yeah.
And so if the second half of what Jesus said there, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's, and render unto God that which is God's, you know, I'm not the first one to point this out, but according to the Bible, God owns everything. And and so that becomes kind of a trick question. They're trying to catch him. And frankly, I think his answer is a trick answer. They kind of walk away befuddled in that instance, not really understanding what he said. I've got a longer explanation of this objection in my book, Resistance to Tyrants. And the subtitle is Romans 13 and the Christian Duty to Oppose Wicked Rulers. And then one of the sections of that book, I spend some time dealing with common arguments, and I talked in some detail about that particular one. Okay, so when we say, what should Caesar render? If you'll remember in the story, Jesus asked them to show him a coin, a denarius.
Yeah, whose image?
Right, and whose image is on this? And they said, well, it's Caesar's image. And so then Jesus said, well, render to Caesar that which is Caesar's.
Mm-hmm.
His image is on it, so give it back to him. Well, Caesar himself was created in the image and likeness of God.
Yeah.
And so whose image is on Caesar? God's image is on Caesar. And so to me, I think that means everything is God's. And what Caesar has is what God has delegated to him. And that kind of leads to my second smart aleck response. Who decides what is Caesar's? That's not really smart aleck. That's a serious question.
Well, especially today.
Yeah, if you're gonna tell me that I have to render, let's say Caesar is the federal government here. If you're gonna tell me that I have to render to the federal government that which is the federal government's, well, where does that? Who gets to say what belongs to them?
Usually, it's the federal
government. Right, right.
And they never seem to be happy with what they have.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've heard people say, well, you know, I just don't want to mess with politics. I don't want to mess with the government. I'll just stay to myself, and me and my family and our church, we'll just do our thing here and not mess with the government. And you know what? Part of me thinks, well, that'd be great. Except the government's not going to let it stay that way.
Yeah.
It's the nature of government to keep amassing more and more power.
Mm-hmm. But if the government was doing biblically what it should do, then you should be able to live in peace and not be bothered by them and you not bother them. But that's not the truth of our situation.
Yeah, and if our government was operating under biblically defined boundaries, like we find in Romans 13, for instance, with the very narrow mission that's defined for government there, what should government be doing? It should be stopping the bad guys, mm-hmm. whether foreign or domestic. If the people are being oppressed either by criminals or by invaders, the government has a job to do at that point and go in and handle that. And man, if the government stuck to that, I'd get along really well with the government at that point, you know?
Yeah.
I'd put away all my anti-government propaganda at that point. if they could stick to that, but they can't. And the image I like to think of whenever I think of the federal government is those the seagulls in the movie Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
You remember them, how anytime anything showed up in their area, they just kind of said, mine, and mm-hmm. they thought anything they saw was food for them. there was no chance that anything existed for some other purpose than to satisfy their hunger, and yeah. That's really the way I think the government is.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't think there's an area of your life beginning the day you're born until the day you're put in the ground. There's not an area of your life that the government hasn't tried to regulate in one way or another.
Yeah.
You know, you're threatened with jail for removing the tag from a mattress that you bought with your own money.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I had somebody tell me, well, actually, if you bought the mattress, then you're allowed to take the tag off. Why is it regulated in the first place?
Yeah. What is on that tag that's so important?
Right. I can take my own tag off, but just for spite, I'm going to sneak into everybody else's house. Take their tags off. Take that, coppers. Okay, so render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I think the issue becomes, well, what is Caesar's?
Yeah.
And it's not as if the government doesn't, or it's not as if the Bible doesn't answer that question. It really does.
It does.
And when you go to the Old Testament, you find specific instructions for what the government should be punishing and what it shouldn't. Not every sin is a crime, you know. And so when the government, when the Bible tells the government to punish something, then do that, you know.
Yeah.
That's what your role is. All right, let's move forward.
Okay, so number 8. But you eat shellfish, or but you wear clothes with mixed fibers.
Okay, we hear that a lot. From,
really?
Yeah, actually we do. We, especially when we say, you know, the government shouldn't really have what we know as religious liberty in the sense of everybody gets to just do whatever they want, build whatever churches they want to build or something like that, or, you know, proselytize for any idea or idol that they want to proselytize for. It should just be a religious free-for-all. But you really don't see that in the law of God. And the question I always like to ask in response to these particular objections, well, you eat shellfish, you're telling me I need to obey this law from the Old Covenant, but you're eating shellfish or you're wearing clothes with mixed fibers. Frankly, what I want to say is, do you have time for me to explain theonomy to you? Because these objections are being made by somebody who simply doesn't understand what we're saying. Theonomists are not saying that we need to go back and obey everything that's written in the Old Covenant the way it's written in the Old Covenant. You know, we believe that the ministry of Christ changed a lot of things.
Yeah.
Some things carry forward and some things don't. In fact, a lot of things don't. And so, just because we may say the penalty for rape should be murder because the Old Testament, or the penalty for rape, let me try that again. Just because we say the penalty for rape and murder should be death because the Old Testament says so, that doesn't mean we're talking about whether or not we should eat shellfish or mix the fibers in our clothes. And the reason is because theonomy says you don't get to just put these laws away because you don't like them. You need a word from the lawgiver
to change anything.
Yeah, to make it plain that these things have changed. And I just want to point out where I think that word is in this instance is Ephesians chapter 2, starting in verse 11. Reading out of the New American Standard, it says, therefore remember that formerly you, the Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by the so-called circumcision, which is performed in the flesh by human hands, remember that you were at that time separate from Christ, excluded from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Christ Jesus, you who formerly were far off have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who made both groups into one and broke down the barrier of the dividing wall, by abolishing in his flesh the enmity which is the law of commandments contained in ordinances, that in himself he might make the two into one new man, thus establishing peace. and might reconcile them both to, in one body to God. So what that passage is saying is, to this first century church that was filled with both ethnic Jews and ethnic Gentiles, mm-hmm. saying God sent Jesus to bring both groups. He calls them two men, the Jew and the Gentile, and to make them into one new man. What was separating them? It was these commandments contained in ordinances.
Yeah.
And those are specifically the ordinances that drew distinctions between Jew and Gentile. The biggest one of those would have been circumcision. Of course, that's done away in the new covenant, not a commandment of God anymore. But others you can think of are the food laws. We just saw at church that the unclean versus clean distinction in the law is really about people and distinguishing between the people of God and the Gentiles. Mm-hmm. And the same with things like the mixed fibers and stuff like that. It's drawing a distinction. Jews have to dress a certain way. They have to groom their beard in a certain way. And they're not allowed to cut their hair on their head a certain way, all for the sake of setting them apart from the Gentiles. It was these laws specifically that Ephesians 2 is talking about, the ones that erected a wall between the Jews and the Gentiles. Those are done away. And so that's what theonomy is about. Listening carefully to the lawgiver himself, and if he changes something, then that something is changed.
Yeah.
All right, let's look at the next one.
Okay. Jesus never told his followers to take over the civil government.
Right. That's supposed to be said with a whine. But Jesus never said that his followers should take over the civil government. Well, you know, what does disciple the nations mean? Or, let me ask this, what if a king got saved? I think those are things to think about. What does it mean when we say that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords? It does say that in the New Testament.
Yeah.
Is that just kind of a neat title we can put on a poster or something? Or does Jesus really function as King over Kings, Lord over Lords? I think in the Great Commission, Matthew chapter 28, when Jesus tells his disciples to go out and make disciples of the nations and teach them to obey everything that he has commanded, and he does so having already claimed that all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to him, how is that not a command to go take over the nations? You know, you start making disciples, you're going to change the culture. You're going to change the society.
Well, and that's the whole reason that they were so upset in Acts, is because they turned the world upside down.
There you go.
It wasn't about the status quo anymore, and it was a radical change and shift, not in just what they did, but what they thought.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and there are other things like this that, you know, you never see Jesus or the disciples, you never see them resisting the civil government. And that's not even true. You know, you see Paul purposely running away from the one governor that wanted to capture him. He and his friends let him down.
Yeah, the little basket thing.
Right, from a window in the wall, they let him down, so he escaped. That's resisting. Peter walking out of prison on more than one occasion after the authorities put him there.
Yeah.
And that's resisting.
And how many times were they told, all right, now don't do this anymore?
Right.
And they said, okay, we'll see you next time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But, you know, even if that was true, even if it was true to say that you never see the Lord or his apostles actively resisting human government, that still is not that doesn't make your case. If we see in the Old Testament the people of God resisting ungodly government, you still have to deal with those examples. Mm-hmm. And for one, the book of Judges is filled with examples like that, where you had like Ehud. You know, ask King Eglon if the people of God never resisted.
Yeah.
He's the guy you'll find with the sword going all the way through. Right.
Yeah.
And so this idea that the Lord's people are not never told to resist. We never see examples of resistance. That's just fallacious.
Well, and then you're supposed to have dominion, so...
Yeah, you're supposed to have dominion.
What is
Absolutely.
That mean?
So... Oh, we get to have dominion over whatever Caesar doesn't claim as his own.
There's something he doesn't claim.
For right now, they can't tell what you're thinking, so... So have dominion over your thoughts, which you should, but I think Jesus intended a little bit more for his kingdom. Yeah. All right, let's move on.
Okay, so the next one is, we should just preach the gospel.
Yeah, we should just preach the gospel. Let's not get involved in the messy business of politics. The church should just be preaching the gospel. My question is, do I get to take any bathroom breaks? You know, do I get to take a shower? That's not preaching the gospel. Am I allowed to do that? Is our church allowed to have a potluck? That's not preaching the gospel. Is our church allowed to have a nursery? You know, that's not preaching the gospel. Mm. Yeah, a lot of these churches where you... I was just seeing something where a pastor of a large church had been challenged by a group to say... And the group had said something like... How come we never see your church down at the abortion mill protesting? And he said, you know, we're doing everything we can. We really are. And this person who had challenged him got a hold of the church's schedule. And every evening of the week is full up with activities and get-togethers. And we're going to meet. And old folks meet now. Young folks meet now. Mm-hmm. All during the week. Single moms club. Here's the old wives club and
right. Okay.
here's the men's prayer deal over here, and the whole week is filled with stuff that they're doing.
Yeah.
But hey, how come y'all aren't doing anything about abortion? Hey, we're doing everything we can. We should just preach the gospel. Really? So the softball league, you can't shouldn't be. That's just ridiculous. And the other thing about that is you're assuming then that the gospel doesn't include what we've just been talking about, discipling the nations. And the gospel in that instance is just what Jesus is doing in your little trembling heart at the moment. And so that's a pretty truncated view of the gospel. Okay, let's do number 12. Oh, wait, number 11.
Okay, number 11. We're just supposed to walk in love.
Yeah, we're just supposed to walk in love. Y'all are talking about keeping the law and stuff and obeying the old covenant. And we should just walk in love. And so my question is, how do we know what love is? Dr. Walter Kaiser, in the, I think it was a Five Views book. It used to be called The Law, the Gospel, and the Modern Christian. And some of the writers in it were Dr. Greg Bonson, Walter Kaiser, I think his name was Douglas Moo, he's a Lutheran, and Wayne Strickland, I think. Anyway, they were writing these, it's one of those competing views books. And in there, Dr. Kaiser had a beautiful illustration. I thought it was great, and I've stolen it from him completely. He says that to just go to sinful, fallen people and tell them, just walk in love. Just love one another. Mm-hmm. That's a useless thing. It's like getting two teams of nine men and taking them out to the ball field when they've never seen baseball, they've never heard about baseball. But you give them all the equipment that they need, and you divide them up into two teams of nine and say to them, okay, now just play fair.
Yeah.
Well, they don't know what fair play looks like. They don't even know what the object of game is.
Yeah.
And how do you define fair play? In any game you're in, what means? What does it mean that you're fair?
You have to have rules.
You have to have rules, right?
You got to follow these rules.
By definition, if you follow the rules of the game, then you have played fairly, right?
Yeah.
And so his point was, we don't even know what love is, you know, especially if we're not trained in Christian thought or not raised up in the Scripture. How do you know what love is? And how did the first generation of Gentile Christians know what love is?
By obeying the commandments.
Right, it had to be from the Scriptures. From the old covenant Scriptures, that's right, and until the new covenant was written. So his point was that that's just dumb to divide the law from love as if they don't have anything to do with each other.
And if there's any one word that's really perverted in society, it's love.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks it's based on feelings,
right?
Exclusively, and it's not.
Yeah, and even more specifically than feelings, it's appetites.
Yeah.
You know, whatever I happen to want at the moment.
I feel like I need this.
Right.
But not tomorrow.
Right, right. And I was just thinking about that too. I've heard euthanasia justified by appealing to love.
Yeah.
You know, I love this person too much to see them suffer, and that's why I shot her in the head, you know, to end her suffering. And it was out of love, you know, trust me.
Yeah.
Or, you know, well, I've already got more kids than I can take care of, so my love for my current children means that I have to kill the one that I'm carrying around now. And so abortion is a loving thing, or any sexual perversion you can think of is justified by an appeal to love. Okay, what's next?
Number 12. All we need to do is love God and love people.
Right, love God and love people.
That sounds good.
Right, it's very related. My question in return is, where did those commandments come from? You know, when Jesus answered the challenge, what is the greatest commandment? And he answered with two.
Yeah.
You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Where
and
did
then,
those come from?
What does he say after that?
Oh, what does he say?
And all these hang.
Oh, yeah. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. That's right. And good catch there. Good assist. But my point is, you go back and find the references. Where did he get those two commandments from? Deuteronomy 6 and Leviticus chapter 19. Now, Leviticus chapter 19, it's filled with what most Christians believe are really obscure laws. Who in the world reads Leviticus chapter 19?
Jesus.
Yeah, apparently. And so it's amazing then that Jesus pulls the second greatest commandment out of a place that most Christians consider to be just obscure.
Yeah.
You know, you're reading the law way too closely if you're reading in that passage. Yeah, so that's related to what we said. This idea, I just ran into it the other day. I read a book by a guy. We may talk about it later. It's a book written by a guy defending what's called New Covenant theology, and he was given seven distinctives of New Covenant theology, and one of them was something like, I can't quote it here, I don't have it in front of me, one of them was, we just believe in love, and we're not about the law, and
that's crazy.
And love doesn't have anything to do with the law, and I'm like,
well, does he read his Bible?
Apparently not as much as Jesus. Okay, so the law tells us what love is. That's right.
Okay, so the next one is, we're just supposed to focus on becoming more like Jesus.
Yeah, just follow Jesus. You know, you don't have to worry about all those laws. Just read what Jesus does and says, and then you'll be good. My smart aleck answer is, so we follow Jesus when he's out there breaking all of God's commandments? Is that what we do?
Did he do that?
Right, and of course the opposite is true. What did Jesus always say?
Perfectly, you know, kept.
Yeah, I always do the will of my Father.
Yeah.
And so, honestly, we ought to understand, you can't be saved if Jesus ever broke the commandments
exactly.
of God.
Exactly.
Even in one place. So Jesus perfectly kept the law of God. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to tell me, don't worry about the law, just be like Jesus. Excuse me?
Yeah.
You know, so that.
Do you know who Jesus was?
Yeah, that doesn't seem to hold much water to me. Okay.
Okay. Number 14. Taxation is not theft.
What?
Right.
Because it was theirs anyway.
That was hard to say.
Good. Somebody's been training you well, young Padawan. I've made it a a hobby of mine. Any meme that comes on my, any meme on Facebook I see that has the words taxation is theft.
Yeah.
I repost every single one of
those. I know.
And so I've had people say, well, you might want to explain that a little bit more, because there are some Christians who believe that taxation is not always theft, or it doesn't have to be theft. And so
I guess if you just hand it over willingly.
Right, voluntary taxation.
Have the donation.
Right.
That's not how my taxes work.
Well, I think what they would say, oh, let me give my smart aleck answer. When they say taxation is not theft, I kind of want to say, well, what is theft then? If it's not forcibly taking my property, what is it? Okay, but the answer is, to be fair to my Christian brothers who have given some thought to this, I think some of them would say taxation is not theft if the reason the government is taxing you is to perform its God-given mission. A government has a right to be funded to do what God called it to do, would be the argument there. And then my answer is, well, then how come in the law of God it never authorized the civil government or the king to tax anybody for anything? See, I don't think anybody realizes how small the government would be if we followed God's commands. Mm. It would be tiny. You wouldn't. I don't even know what you would tax people for. You know, what are you gonna? I mean, there's just nothing.
Well, I think even when you go back to when Israel was saying they wanted a king, he was like, "You don't know what you're asking for,
right.
Because with a king comes all these other things
that
he will decide that. Uh-huh. Oh, by the way, I need these things, and they're your sons, and they're going to protect me, and I'm going to need your daughters because they're going to work in my house.
Yeah, somebody's got to cook the food for the armies,
and then I'm going to need your food because I got a lot of people in my place.
Right. Well, and then the argument then is, well, you know, when Jesus was faced with a tax situation, you know, at one point they came up to Peter and said, does your master not pay the temple tax? And he said, yeah, he does. And then went back to Jesus and said, so do we pay this?
We do, right? I said we do.
And basically Jesus' answer was, technically, as far as right and wrong is concerned, we're free from this tax, but in order to not give offense, I'm going to pay it, and you're going to find the money in the mouth of a fish.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's paying the same way that you might pay a bully in school who comes up and demands your lunch money. I mean, you pay it so that he doesn't hurt you, and you pay it to stay alive another day, you know? So you pay it as a way of appeasement. That the fact that you handed over without the bully beating you up, that doesn't mean he didn't just take your lunch money. He really did. He really did steal it. And the same goes for Romans 13 at the end of the passage that is in question. Paul says you should give honor to whom honor is due, and custom to whom custom, and taxes to whom taxes. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same sort of thing he's talking about by way of concession. It might be better for you to stay out of prison so you can continue to witness and share the gospel. And if you can put up with a certain amount of evil from the government, and I think we should. I'm not saying we go with torches and pitchforks the first time that the government does something horrible. But I think we are called to probably put up with everything that we can put up with. But that doesn't give blanket authority to the government to do whatever that is. And so if I can stay out of jail and be able to provide for my family and share the gospel with people by paying some taxes, then I'll pay those taxes. Now, I know people who have chosen differently and haven't paid taxes in a very long time. And you know what? Cheers for them. I'm happy. So taxation is theft. Why? Because the Bible never authorizes the civil government to collect a tax. That's it.
Well, and you have no say in it as well either. Yeah. You have no say in actually what you have to give them or how they're using the money that you've given them.
That's right. Taxation is really a complete violation of the theory of private property ownership. You know, especially property taxes themselves, when you think about it.
Yeah.
You take out this loan or you pay a whole ton of money in order to purchase a house, but stop paying your property taxes for a little while and you're going to find out who really owns the house. And it's not you, you know.
Yeah.
They're going to come for you and kick you off your land and put you in jail or whatever.
Yeah.
And so really all that money that you're paying, it's really more, you're paying rent until the government says, you know, actually we want that land. And so taxation really is theft. It's a complete violation of private property. All right.
We're going to go down to the last one.
Okay.
It's just, that's Old Testament.
Yeah. You're stuck in the Old Testament, bro. And then the question is not very smart, Alec. It's a real question. Well, what was Paul referring to in 2 Timothy 3, verses 16 through 17?
Is it the Old Testament?
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Of course, Paul says to Timothy there that... high five. Paul says to Timothy in that place that all Scripture is breathed out by God.
And at the time.
And is profitable.
All they really had was...
Right, the New Testament was in production.
The Old Testament.
And even after the New Testament was written, it takes a while to get copies made. And you know, it's not like you can just email copies around. These have to go on foot to all these different places. So for decades after Christ was raised from the dead, the only Scripture that the church as a whole had was the Old Testament.
Yeah.
And that's how they preached the gospel. They preached it out of the Old Testament. And that's how they trained each other in righteousness. And this is, the nasty fruit of dispensationalism. That, you know, there's a radical form of dispensationalism, actually. I'm not sure it still exists in great numbers, but there was a form of dispensationalism that said even not all of the New Testament is Scripture for the church. And, you know, they said that the Old Testament was actually Jewish, or not the Old Testament, but the Gospels were actually Jewish because most of it happens before Pentecost, before the resurrection and Pentecost. And so everything that Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, dispensationalists used to say, well, that's not Christian, that's Jewish. Right. And so,
that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, so they had some groups that actually had the Christian scriptures narrowed down to just some of the letters of Paul. Everything else, it's for the Jews.
Eh. I thought there was neither Jew nor Gentile anymore, though.
Yeah, and I think Paul's the one that said most of that. So,
yeah,
I'm not saying it makes any sense. I'm just saying they did it.
I see. Well, hey, I think you made it through.
We made it through.
Went a little long, but that's all right.
Yeah, a little bit long. So we've got a conference coming up. Not the weekend that this is published, but the next weekend. So June 17th, 18th, and 19th, Bojdar Marinov in Tucumcari, New Mexico. If you plan on coming, if you haven't already contacted me about it, please do. Just let me know. We don't have to register you or anything like that, and it's totally free. But it would be nice to know how much food to make and stuff like that.
And so, the hotel deals, right?
Yeah, and we do have a couple of hotel deals, and that would help you out. All right.
So, are there any new developments for this podcast?
Oh, nothing we can talk about yet.
Oh, it's under wraps.
It's under wraps. Yeah, there may be some changes coming here pretty soon. They'll be fun, though. They won't be bad.
they may get rid of the person who does the introductions.
Three strikes, you're out.
Well, it's tricky.
See, we edited all those failures out, though, and you're not, so nobody knows even what you're talking about.
Failures.
Yeah.
If we had a blooper reel, it'd be really hilarious.
Okay. Why weak?
Oh, don't cry. It was All right. Well, we need to say goodbye, y'all, and just say thanks for listening.
Yes.
Go out and glorify God and do it on purpose.
That's right.
Everybody's going to glorify God. It's just much better when you do it on purpose. Mm-hmm. All right, say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Pastor Gordon Runyon and friends as they set the record straight. Visit us at ReconstructionistRadio.com to download your favorite audiobooks. The Reconstructionist Radio Podcast Network brings to you a complete weekly lineup of 8 distinct podcasts. Starting on Sunday, Setting the Record Straight with Pastors Gordon Runyon, Jason Garwood, and Joseph Randall Spurgeon. Mondays, The Post Mill Report with Nathan F. Conkey. Tuesdays, Axe to the Root with Bojidar Marinov. Wednesdays, The Hellraiser Report with Scott Allen Buss. Thursdays, The War Room with Bill Evans and Jason Sanchez. Fridays, Once Dead, where Christians give testimonies of God's grace upon their lives. And Saturdays, Restoring America One County at a Time lectures with Joel McDermott. And our new podcast, No Neutrality, with various contributors. Please don't forget to subscribe to each individual podcast or the Reconstructionist Radio Master Feed, where you will get all of the content we produce, including our free audiobooks. Don't forget to go to ReconstructionistRadio.com to volunteer as a narrator and to partner with us financially. May the Holy Spirit stir you into action for Christ and His kingdom.